This is the Brisbane Football Review with your host, James Coughlin. One of these days, I will master the ability to complete a sentence. Scott Owen.
What would I know? I'm just the weekend host around here.
And Adam Pace.
Look, I think what other choice do you have?
Starting now.
Well, after a week where just about everything went right for the Raw, unfortunately it couldn't happen twice in a row. But either way, it was still an entertaining weekend of football, both locally and nationally. A bit frustrating overseas, but we won't cover that on this edition of the Brisbane Football Review. Instead, we'll try and keep things as focused on the A-League as we can. Hello, everyone. It's James, Scott and Adam with you on this Tuesday evening. And Scott, wasn't it lovely having like 2 days of autumn?
It was nice to have a couple of days of autumn. And what do you mean it was not so good overseas? Liverpool lost at home. That's fantastic.
Yeah, well, okay, that was funny. Arsenal losing was just depressingly predictable. But Adam, I know you...
So was United drawing with Bournemouth, but that's also... that's not relevant to the top of the table.
Yeah, and Adam, speaking of depressingly predictable, how are you?
I'm good. I was going to say, oh, boo-hoo. At least you actually get a shot at bloody winning a title, not other than staring bloody relegation in the league, trying to basically dock you for every point you've earned. But that's another win for another time. But, yeah, but if we're talking about overseas, yeah, first world problems, mate.
And they're my favourite kind of problems, if I'm being honest. All right, well...
Yeah. You can tell I'm really keen to talk about this game from Saturday, can't you?
It started off well. Like, it was a lot of fun pre-game. It was a beautiful day, and it was all set up well. But didn't we say this time last week that everything about the setup for this game, Scott, had us nervous, and rightfully so, as it turned out?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what it is about Newcastle and Suncorp Stadium. I mean... They just seem to perform really, really well. It doesn't matter if they're playing well, doesn't matter top of the table, bottom of the table, doesn't seem to matter. They tend to absorb pressure and then in the second half get a goal at the other end of the field against the run of play. And unfortunately for Brisbane's perspective, that came true once again.
Yeah, and we were saying at halftime, it's not like the Roar had been bad. And, you know, they've played some games throughout the last few years where they've found themselves behind... And they've gone, yeah, they deserve that. But it just feels like this time they were more, I want to say wasteful. Adam, is that a fair description?
It's a theme from the whole season, pretty much. You don't take your chances. You don't score your goals. You're just asking to serve, to be counterpunched. And it's happened yet again. The times that the Roar have gone and scored first, taking their opportunities, they've gone on and won. So it's an issue of the case of if you're not going to lay down the platform and convert your possession, convert your opportunities into goals, you know, at the end of the day, you almost get what you deserve to a point. And Newcastle are the masters of that. They've learnt from Unite round that, you know, to know how to manage the game. That's the one thing. So, if, you know, speaking to Rob Stanton at that press conference to the one now, is that that's the one thing that's changed for Newcastle, is they've actually learned to manage a game out. And because the Newcastle of back in January probably would have got run down again. But that not only did they go to in front, the world didn't even look like, you know, getting a goal in the second half. But after, I think the only chance they really had was a great save by Ryan Scott to deny Jonas Markowski when he just come on. But other than that, they didn't even look like, you know, disturbing Ryan Scott and the Newcastle backline.
And I think that's where a lot of the frustration for me boils down to, where, yeah, you're right, like they had the ball, but weirdly enough, I've just got the stats up now, so it was 64% possession for the Raw, so they had no dramas getting the ball, but it was just making things happen in that final third. Even though they wound up with 23 attempts on goal, 5 on target, I can't remember, oh, there were maybe one or two chances out of that I thought, geez, that really could have been a goal.
Yeah, I mean, it's, as Adam said, that's been unfortunately the tale of the season, isn't it? That's, the Roar have had plenty of possession in games, a lot of territory, a lot of dominance, a lot of chances and shots, but they haven't been able to convert them. And that was the case in the first half. I mean, it could and maybe should have been 2 or 3 nil, and then it's a completely different game, and the game is over by half time, and we're having a very, very different conversation now. But that's the way the whole season's gone for the Royal. They've had plenty of possession, James. They have not been able to capitalise on it, and we'll hear from Ruben Zakovic in his press conference later on. But I lost count of the amount of times he said in that press conference post game, the lack of quality in the front third hurt them. And that's been the case all season, unfortunately. They haven't had that consistent goal scoring in the front third, or the multiple consistent goal scoring threats in the front third to get them the wins where they need. They've had some players who've had played well in some patches. James, have gone on runs that have scored 4 or 5 goals in consecutive games, but they haven't had that goal a game player or goal every other game player to convert the chances that they've been creating all year long.
And that's where I feel like you can sort of see, like, from especially the players that have carried over from the last few years, a lot of those same confidence issues that have plagued them dating back, I want to say, to basically the I'm trying to think as far back as maybe John Aloisi's second to last season, or his last full season, where it
the Macaroni season?
Yeah, that season and the one after that, where it just feels like this is a team that is so reliant on confidence and getting on the front foot that, you know, sometimes they do seem to find it quite difficult to get that thing through. And look, we've seen moments this year where they have been able to pull results out. There was it 3 games in a row where they had late goals at Suncorp to generate some positive outcomes, but it just feels like at the moment they can't quite get what they need to get the end result. I feel like I'm talking myself in circles here, but Adam, am I making sense here? Please bail me out of this circle.
Well, yeah, you are, but the thing is as well, what I wanted to preface about that, you know, kind of from what Ruben Zakovic said about, you know, about lack of quality in the final third, that doesn't mean that's code for blame Thomas Waddingham. And that, like I said, that's where a lot of fans seem to be sometimes forgetting. And those fans can just go stack marbles on the freeway as far as I'm concerned, because I don't know what the hell they're talking about. Who on earth would expect an 18-year-old, as good as he has been, you know, to carry this line? And look, if you want to blame the club and their recruiting and all that, by all means. But, you know, and I sound like, you know, I'm the president of the Thomas Waddingham fan club, but, you know, this is just, it wouldn't matter if it's him or anyone else. To expect a young player of his caliber, as good as he is, to carry the load, it's more than that. It's almost, I would almost interpret that as saying, oh, we need a quality number 9 or a quality number 10 to be able to take the pressure burden off that young 18-year-old who's going to be a star in the future, so he can actually be, he can actually learn it to craft his game, not be the reliant one that the whole fan base expects he's going to lead us to glory. It just doesn't work like that.
Marbles on the freeway, that's a new one for you, Adam. We'll keep that one in stock for future weeks. But you are right. Thomas Waddingham has done his job this year. He's a young player making his first set of senior appearances as a young player. He's got 6 in 19 in the league, 10 in 26, if you want to include his good form in the cup earlier in the year. But he's got 6 for the league season. Henry Hoare, Emile Usnich have 5, and Joe O'Shea has 7. So there's nobody there that's even close to 10 goals for the season. And if you look at what you need to make it to the finals, let alone to be a contending team, you need at least one player who's getting 10 plus goals a year. And you can't, it's unfair to rely on the young striker who's done very, very well this year to be the sole goal threat, because for a long part of the season, he has been.
But that's also where I feel like the best question to ask is, and this comes back to the recruitment as well, Adam, where you say, has Waddingham been miscast? And is that maybe where his run in the Australia Cup turned into actually the worst possible outcome, where he played well in that cup run and he's done, I would say, a more than adequate job for the most part this season. But if this side was to compete for the finals, your leading striker needs to be getting more than 6 goals. And yes, I know they've had support from the likes of Henry Hoare. J. O'Shea has been reliable, especially when called up to the penalty spot. Mile Yuzinch has had his moments as well, but he, like, Waddingham, I think, has had the same issues that a lot of the supporting cast around him has had, where, like, the performances have been, the proper performances that you would expect from someone in that role have been few and far between. And for Waddingham, you can put it down to the fact that he's 18, still developing, and look, in 3-4 years, hell, hopefully in 6 months, he's able to sort of take that next step and go to that level. But for the 2023-24 season, that's where things have really just broken down. And yes, it's not just down to Waddingham. It's that entire attacking group. I don't want to say just the front three, front four or whatever, but whether it's through injuries or just guys having bad days at the office. And it has been that way across every coaching staff, every coach that they've had. They've had bad days at the office. And it just feels like, specifically in terms of Waddingham, I'm left to wonder if maybe they would have been better off with, say, I don't want to say a Massimo Macaroni, but someone with that profile of a veteran, experienced striker who he can sort of job share with. Maybe that would have been the better option. But, and because he's still learning. Like, it would be great to have him in a situation like Adelaide with Iran Kunda, where you can say, he's doing so damn well, we just have to have him out there. But yeah, he is still very much a developmental project, and I think there is a phenomenal future ahead for him. But right here, right now, it feels like he's just been asked to do too much.
Yeah, it does feel a little bit like that. They also went into the season, don't forget, James, with 3 centre forwards, who all of whom hadn't played at this level before, because you include Ryland Brownlee and Jonas Markowski in that mix. They had been NPL or developmental younger players coming through, in depending on which player you want to talk about. So they didn't have that player who had played at the level before with that experience and knowledge and know-how. And that's where what you were saying is having that player who could pinch hit with a Waddingham, who had that experience, might have been a valuable thing. I think Marco Rojas might have been brought in to be that player in January. And in fairness to the Brisbane Roar and Marco, when he's been available, he's played really, really well. It's just been he came in late in the season, took a little while to get going, and had a couple of niggling injuries that have prevented him from playing in every game. But they needed that player who could just give Tommy Waddingham a spell when required. Because in fairness, Markowski, when he came on, actually did okay. As Adam said, he nearly got himself on the end of that cross from Corey Brown. And if he does go on the end of that, we are probably having a bit of a different discussion as well. But what you're saying, James, of having that experienced striker to counteract Waddingham might have been something that just wasn't quite there for them.
Yeah, and I'm not saying they should have ditched Markowski or Brownlee for that either, because those guys have had parts to play all season long. And for me, it also just comes down to the fact that, like, I'm also left to wonder, you know, geez, what if Jelicic was available at the start of the season? Or what about, or, you know, best case scenario, Marco Rojas comes in, and you've got that goal-scoring winger, or number 10, as you said, Scott, who can just sort of work with Berenguer, work with O'Shea, work with Coletti/Gomulka, and just, again, take that pressure off Waddingham. Because Waddingham right now is good enough to finish the chances when they come to him. But I feel like his pressing is good as well. I think that's actually probably the one area I will give him an A all season long, is his work is on the high press. But I kind of feel like he's not quite at that stage yet where he can get the ball, take a few touches, set up and score.
And he's 18 in his age. When he gets to be able to do all those things, James, he'll be progressing to an overseas league in the not too distant future beyond that. So that's the developmental phase with him. Now, he's still in. He's nowhere near the finished product yet. And over time, he'll get there.
For sure. And actually, funnily enough, I just had a random thought of Cyrus Demme. It's that not quite the same profile of just banging in 20 goals in the NPL, but it's another one of those young strikers who, like, had plenty to offer, but maybe just didn't quite land in a spot where there was enough support coming around him.
I know we don't normally talk about NPL as such, but if Cyrus Demme keeps on scoring goals like he did on Sunday for Olympic, now that he's back in the country, he'd be worth more look for the Roar, because that was a very, very well taken goals. So look, maybe sort of, you know, back to the future almost on him. But yeah, I think that experienced striker, I think that's where the issue lies. And look, at the end of the day, it was nice and it was an experiment, and perhaps the Roar didn't have the money to go out and get a suitable striker, because you want this, and I use the word suitable striker, because there's plenty of number nines out there here and overseas, but you want them actually have the ability and be able to score 15 goals in a season, not waste cap space. Like, we've had so many strikers come through in the last couple of years, especially in mid-season. So to have the argument of, oh, the club should have just gotten a number nine, well, yeah, you get it's about identifying them, but they've actually got to show up. And sometimes it might be a waste and be a detriment to Thomas Waddingham. So it's a double-edged sword as far as the argument goes. But what the Royal do need is a player like Apostolos Stamatopoulos, who has been absolutely sensational for Newcastle. And he is really challenging for the Golden Boot.
Funny you mentioned that. It was, Stamatopoulos, where he scored the second goal that really put the game to bed. But I suppose the other issue as well, and, you know, I'll try and present other sides of the story as well, but if you're going out and recruiting a number nine, it's probably actually harder to recruit someone for that experienced striker role that the Royal would be looking for to support Waddingham than it would be to go out and find a line-leading guy who you're expecting to compete for the Golden Boot, because you've basically got to sell, you know, player A on the fact that they're not going to be starting every week. Like, they might get, say, 5 starts, 20 appearances off the bench, and still be expected to contribute. Like, name me a striker that's happy doing that.
No.
You're challenging coming in to compete. That's what you're selling him on, James. There's no absolute guarantee. But if you come here and perform, you will play. That's the way you sell it to them. And then most strikers will look at it and say that's a challenge that they believe they can meet. Because every striker you've ever seen will back themselves in since they get the chance to score the goals. And you're right, Stamatopoulos was really, really impressive on the weekend. I mean, apart from in transition in the last 5 minutes when he probably should have had a second goal on the counter, or Newcastle's third on the counter-attack. Other than that, he was really, really impressive, and he's been the shining light for that Newcastle side. And we should give them some credit, actually, because they did dig in that first half and found a way to keep it to nil all. And then they had their couple of moments in the second half where they just took their chances. And Clayton Taylor's goal, it wasn't the best defending from the Brisbane Roar, but it was well taken from his perspective. And the second goal, the set piece, again, not the greatest of defending from the Brisbane Roar, but really good ball from Costa Grozos and a good header from Stamatopoulos. So they dug in, Newcastle, and they got what they needed out of the game. In the small moments they had, they were clinical, and that's what we're talking about.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't want to spend too long talking about the Newcastle situation either, but you've got to wonder how much of that comes down to them deciding, you know what, let's play spoil. Let's try and prove a point in the final weeks, because for them, like, I really hope it's not the case, but that could have been the third last game for the Newcastle Jets. I really hope it's not.
Could have been their last away game.
Yeah. And for them, they've got plenty to play for. And you just hope that for their sake, that some of these guys could have been playing for contract futures, which, Scott?
I just want to talk about Newcastle Jets. What a great day it was for them, by the way, to win in the A-League men. And then they go away in the A-League women and get a first win in 15 years as well. So they had a great day on Saturday night.
They did. All right, well, I was actually going to use the talk about the recruiting needs to tee up Ruben Zadkovich's press conference, but we kind of blew past that. So, everybody, here is Ruben Zadkovich's press conference from Saturday night.
Yeah, it was pretty clear, you know, how it played out. I thought first half we played some really nice stuff. It kind of looked exactly like I wanted it to look, except for, you know, the finishing touch in the box, which is something that we've been working on, and, you know, the execution wasn't quite there. So a lot of positives from the first half, but obviously second half, we gave away a very soft first goal and then a pretty soft second goal, if I'm honest. So disappointed with that.
Is that kind of way you view the whole season in terms of the way the season's gone? You just like to have plenty of possession and chance, not able to take them, and then unfortunate errors at the other end of the field that have cost goals?
I think in terms of how we're controlling the game with the ball and the style of football that we're playing, I certainly think it's much more advanced now than where it was earlier. I think at the start of the year, I was watching from the outside, obviously wasn't a part of it, but there was a real intensity to the way the team pressed and defended, and I think at times we look a little bit tired.
Can you talk us through the thinking behind Anthony Burke-Gilroy on the right-hand side and how he went in that role?
Look, I thought he did really well, to be honest. A new role for him. Obviously, you know, we're without Keegan Jelicic, without Marco Rojas, two very big players for us. It's kind of like taking Stamatolopoulos and, you know, Clayton Taylor out for them. That'd be definitely without. So for us to lose two of our best attacking players in the front third is obviously a loss, and we look to fill the hole with Berkey. He's done a really good job there before, actually scored goals at A-League level playing right wing. So I thought he was good without being fantastic.
You had the majority of possession, shots on goals. Is it sort of more the same as far as the whole sort of not taking opportunities with the side?
Yeah, look, it's pretty obvious. I've been here however many weeks now. Every time we've scored first, we've won. It's pretty clear the way we play. It's pretty clear the intent to control the game with the ball. And their game plan, to be honest, goes out the window the moment we score and take one of those chances, which we needed to in the first half. When you don't take them chances, obviously goals change games, and then, you know, they get a moment, a pretty soft goal. Didn't really do much to get it, to be honest. They played a long ball into our box, Kaitrou and header, fell to Clayton Taylor. He took probably 10 to 13 touches, came back inside and shot unopposed. So it's a very weak goal for us to give away. And now the situation becomes a lot more difficult. They get more numbers behind the ball, they defend their box even more, and it makes it even harder to break down. So I think for us, it's been a little bit more clever in those moments when they have stacked their box. But at the end of the day, it comes down to execution and quality in the front third, and in both boxes we weren't good enough.
Two games ago in the season, finals now has become mathematical. At best, need a lot of results to go your way. As a side, do you start looking at perhaps younger players to give them chances, or do you stick to what you've got at the moment with the squad, which is a fairly settled side, and play out these last two games to see how it goes?
Well, like I say, I don't think it's too settled, if I'm honest. We've had to go without Marco and without Keegan and had to make some changes there and bring Taras in the last 2 weeks. So, you know, there may be changes, there may be other people that get opportunity, but for now, you know, we have to stay very focused on the positives out of the game. You know, let's call it for what it is. We've had 65% of the ball, probably maybe more, probably double the amount of passes, double the amount of final third entries, 12 corners to two. I mean, in every key marker, our model looks pretty good at the moment. We need some quality to turn that model and that possession and that dominance into results.
Speaking of sort of disruptions, Keegan Jelicic called up to Socceroos. Oliver was just a late. Did that affect any game plans as far as your preparation for this week?
Oh, 100%. I've said it before. I'll say it again. I think Keegan Jelicic is one of the best, you know, prospects and talents in Australian football. His work ethic, his metres per minute, his high-speed metres, everything about the kid. He's a very good, very technical player. So, yes, it's a massive loss for us. But I must stress, you know, as a club, we're very supportive of our young ones' international teams. And, you know, we were very happy for him that he got called up. You know, I personally thought he probably should have been there from the start. But for him to get that opportunity, that's Vidi's call. And I'm glad that he's in that squad. And I hope he goes and represents, you know, him, his family, and certainly our club well. And I'm sure he will.
All right, Scott, Adam, I'm going to bring a press box conversation onto the show.
Uh-oh, this could be really, really dangerous. Which one are you going to bring up?
All right,
so there's privileged information that's coming out of the press box. Yes, so tread carefully.
So first things first, what do you really think? No, not just kidding.
I played the fifth.
No, that's okay. I think I'm the one that cops it the most up there anyway, especially my wardrobe choices. Now, what I was actually going to ask, being a bit of a vulture-minded person that I can be, knowing that the Jets are probably, like, potentially going to be ripe for the picking, the players especially, which Jets player would you be targeting if you were raw management?
Was that to me or to Adam? Sorry.
Well, it's to both of you.
You go first, Adam.
Oh, I go immediately. I'm going for Apostolos Thanatopoulos. I think that's that. I think he's the perfect story of a player that is was a young sort of rising star. Sort of hit a ceiling almost, went overseas, has come back, has been an absolute star. So it's a case of if everyone's on the table. Yeah, he'd be my first draft pick, basically.
Right. Yeah, well, I would say the same thing, but for the sake of saying something different, I thought Philip Kansa at the back. I know he had the issue with Robert Mack the week before, but he's a really good young defender, went overseas to Scotland and came back, and he's a player who you could see slotting into the back line. So either of those would be a really good choice, and players like Piscopo have done okay in the league, but Brisbane got a lot of those players in the attacking area who are creative and can do a few different things. So they've got players like that. So to add to what they already have, someone like a Cancer or a Stamatolopoulos would be two good choices. So take your pick.
I would potentially be, well, I suppose it also depends on the departures as well. But for me, like Piscopo would be great. But I'm kind of looking at, say, an Archie Goodwin. I kind of feel like he's one of those players that really could come in and have an impact. And because he's sort of that fullback winger type, isn't he?
He is, yeah. A winger.
So, you know, maybe if you're looking at depth options across the back line as well, he can come in and provide that sort of attacking for you. Because I'll give Corey Brown credit. I actually think he's been pretty damn good, especially going forward this year as well. And for a guy who's coming off a pretty long absence, he was one of the players that I actually thought had a pretty decent night at the office.
He did do quite well, Corey Brown, on that left-hand side. He has done for the last month or so since he's got that spot back from Anthony Burke-Gilroy. And you're right, he has had a bit of a disrupted start to the year and took a while to get going, but he's going quite well now. The other player from Newcastle who could be interesting is, I think he's going back to Perth, but Brendan O'Neill would probably fill that number six position quite well as well.
Yeah.
If you want an Australian number six, he's probably one of the better options you're going to have available.
Honestly, I feel like you're probably signing him a year too late.
Like, possibly.
He's been phenomenal, but I don't necessarily, like, you know, I don't want to sound like a comment section here, but I don't necessarily want to be putting too many resources into recruiting guys who are very much on the downward side of their career.
So, yeah, that's fair. I don't know. Either way, hopefully that Newcastle squad can stick together and actually be in the competition next year, because it'd be great to have them around in the A-League. Although I am sick of them coming to Suncorp and taking 3 points every time they travel here. Maybe we can make that a regional game, James. Because everywhere else, when they were up at Redcliffe, the Roar did quite well against them. And on the Gold Coast where they played them, they won. So maybe they can make that a home away game somewhere up north or something.
Yeah, well, actually, here's a question for the comments section then, because I'm just curious now. So Roar against Newcastle, where do you want to travel to see it played? Because I'm sick of seeing the Jets come away from Suncorp with all 3 points.
Yeah, where should the home game be?
And you can't say McDonald Jones Stadium either.
Adam, where do you think it should be?
Anywhere but Suncorp. Because they're 15 out of 21 wins at Suncorp. So, I think 15 out of 22, I should say, wins at Suncorp Stadium all time. So if you don't think that they don't enjoy something about Milton, I don't know. But, yeah, anywhere but, we'll take the Cairns, for as far as I'm concerned.
14 from 21.
Either way.
14 from 21, yep.
Frustratingly productive. Scott.
Yes.
I believe you're doing the 3-2-1s for the Player of the Year this week.
I am, and I literally sent them through to Adam 5 minutes ago, but because I'm a goldfish, I've completely forgotten what they are. Let me just quickly check. 3 for Jay O'Shea, 2 for Henry Hoare, and 1 for Flo Berenguer.
Fair enough. All right. So that's that. other. Oh, that's right. We probably should talk about the finals chances with the other result in the scope of the other results on the weekend. Friday, look, it wasn't pretty, but Wellington got the job done against the Victory to lock in a top two finish for the Knicks. MacArthur late show against Adelaide United in Aaron Kunda's Cooper Stadium farewell. Saturday, either side of the Raw game, Central Coast 2-0 over Western United. The bits I saw had that looking pretty routine. And then, oh boy, what a derby. Sydney FC finally broke the streak of away teams winning the Sydney Derby with a late show. And, considering what else had happened in Sydney on the day as well, it was, obviously a... it was a fairly big contrast compared to the other moods going around as well. So, yeah, that was that. And then Sunday, well, Melbourne City absolutely blasted Perth in their one good performance for the month of April.
Yeah, that's what City seem to do, don't they? They seem to be able to, when they really want to put a team away, they can do that. They did it to the Roar, obviously, around Christmas time. They did it to Western Sydney a month or so ago. They've got that in them, but... they're just as likely to go next week and lose away to Western Sydney Wanderers as well. They've just got no consistency. And you're right, the results pretty much went everything that the Raw would have wanted in terms of a result for the weekend. Everything went against them. MacArthur winning is probably not ideal. Wasn't ideal. Melbourne City winning, not ideal. At least Western Sydney didn't win. But the games on the weekend were absolutely quality. The drama in the Wellington game was phenomenal. I still think Central Coast will wrap up the premiership, but for Wellington now to have a top two spot guaranteed is really, really impressive for them.
And Mariners will be very happy because that ensures their spot in whatever they're calling the Asian Champions League next season as well, because Wellington obviously cannot compete.
Central Coast Mariners, just got to bear in mind as well that they're on a plane to Kyrgyzstan right about now for their first leg of the AFC Cup interzonal final against, I have to look this up, Abdish Atakant. So it's the first leg tomorrow night, 10 p.m. kickoff our time. So look, that's going to be very interesting because Central Coast at the moment are leading the league. But they've also, in the next couple of weeks, in this run home, they've got a trip to Kyrgyzstan and back ahead of their game this weekend. And then, on top of that, they've got the second leg of that AFC Interzonal final to be played in between that and the final round of the season. So I think they play Newcastle at one point and...
Newcastle in the final game.
And it's Adelaide this weekend.
And Adelaide, yeah, this weekend. So whereas Wellington... they do travel a bit, not as far as Central Coast are, not playing as many games. So even it's all within it all square at the moment. It's those two teams, the only two teams that can win the league, and that's going to be very, very interesting about who, whether the Wellington can take advantage of Central Coast's Asian escapades.
You'll just have to wait and see. I just hope that. Central Coast and Wellington can match each other's results this weekend to set up the simultaneous kickoffs in the final weekend. 5:15 Brisbane time, I believe.
Yeah, and so, I just want to know if Central Coast are playing at the same place Socceroos played in Kyrgyzstan, because that's the most picturesque place Socceroos have played in Asian World Cup qualifying.
Spartak Stadium, apparently.
Okay.
I have no idea if that's the same place Socceroos played them, but that was I just remember the sunset over the mountains in the background. Tremendous stuff.
For sure. In terms of the Raw, so those results, the only, I think, positive outcome was that Sydney FC beat the Wanderers because it meant that the deficit between Brisbane and Western Sydney for sixth place remained at 5 points after Brisbane's defeat, although Melbourne City are lurking one behind Western Sydney. So, yeah, I don't want to say it's done, but...
it's done.
It's basically... it's basically hitting the Powerball territory now.
Well, I actually think I've just got the ladder in front of me at the moment. I think it's done because I think they're out because Western Sydney and Melbourne City have got to play this week. Someone's going to pick up points.
Yeah.
So, and they're going to cross that 35 mark, and the Raw with two less wins than both teams. So one less, two less than Wanderers, one less than Melbourne City. If either win, they get past 35. So, and a draw, and Raw winning both the last games is still not going to be enough, because Raw are not going to catch either club based on either wins or goal difference, because their goal difference is negative 12 at the moment. So it's done. We don't even need to. The permutations say it's done.
There is one very, very tiny path still available. So they need to. So by my count, if the Raw win two games, they move to 35 points. A draw between Western Sydney and Melbourne City moves the Wanderers to 35 and City to 34. And then you need both clubs to lose their final round game.
Not going to matter. If as soon as one team gets to 35 points, gotcha. It's all okay. Over.
Now I get you. Yeah, because
yeah, you're because right. because of goal difference and wins. Yeah, as soon as either Western Sydney or Melbourne get to 35, that's it. Which club actually finishes sixth is still at play. But as far as the Raw's path, that path has just hit a landslide.
They still can catch Western Sydney on goal difference, though. They need to basically.
No, they do win, but they get the wins. The wins are the problem.
Two wins would put them on to 10 wins level with Western Sydney. Yeah,
I think James is right. There's a really, really narrow path, but you need 1,000 things to go your way. And by the time the Raw kick off on Saturday evening down in Melbourne, because that Western Sydney, Melbourne City game is the preceding game, it could absolutely be all over depending on the outcome of that. But either way, we're talking supreme mathematicals here, and I think
better off
just saying it's not going to happen.
Nine-goal turnaround the Raw needs. So it's mathematical.
To be fair, given the way Western Sydney have capitulated at times, I'm not ruling out them getting like 5 or 6 put by them in the last round. But I think
the problem is also as well, is if Melbourne City repeats what they did to them last time, it's not going to matter because Melbourne City are going to be the team in the sixth. So yeah, again, it's in the mathematical, one in 100, 1 in 1,000, whatever you want to call it, but. For the sake of it, Wanderers and Melbourne City are playing for sixth spot potentially this weekend.
And what I was,
I'd be more worried for the Raw even finishing in the top eight and avoiding a playoff. That's actually probably what we need to start looking. Not the pressure from above, but the pressure from beneath.
Well, actually, that was a sentence I was just in the middle of starting there, Adam, saying that realistically, finals. Buy a lotto ticket instead. It is that race for the top eight, because in about an hour and a half from now, as we're recording, Adelaide will be kicking off in Tani against Western United. Perhaps John Aloisi can do a favour for his former club, where they take some points off the Reds. But even so, it's basically now about trying to get into seventh or eighth spot to avoid that playoff again.
Yeah, and just to give people the math on that, a win for Adelaide would put them onto 31 points. That's two clear of Brisbane Roar, and a draw would leave them level on 29 points each. Both sides have 8 wins each for the season, but Adelaide have a much superior goal difference. They are a 0 goal difference, Roar a minus 12. So even a draw for Adelaide will put them ahead of the Brisbane Roar, and you can't rule out Newcastle either, potentially throwing a spanner into the works. I know they got home games against Wellington and Central Coast to end the season, both the top two, but they're in some good form at the moment, Newcastle Jets, and they might be able to just get a result against either one, which would shape the premiership race and maybe get them into the top eight. So that race there between Adelaide, Brisbane and Newcastle could be a bit of an interesting one, because I think the race for the six, unfortunately, is done.
And just quietly, even the race to avoid the wooden spoon is pretty interesting as well, where Western United will want to get points tonight to give themselves some breathing space on Perth Glory.
Well, they play at the weekend, I think, so that'll be the determining factor in that one.
But, yeah, either way.
They got luck with the schedule. You got a top six playoff and you got the wooden spoon bowl.
But, yeah, so either way, there's still plenty of intrigue up and down the entire A-League ladder, and yes, it would add more meaningful games if there was a chance of relegation. I get that, but we're not having that debate again. We're moving on because we are actually going to start off with...
That's some positivity to talk about.
Yes, hey. A big congratulations to Sian Fryer for making her Matilda's debut, cap number 228, in last Wednesday's win over Mexico.
Yeah, she came on off the bench in the second half in that win over Mexico, the latest Queenslander to represent the national team, and she did quite well in her cameo off the bench as well. And it seemed like she did really well off the bench. We'll see what it leads to going forward. I know there's a lot of injuries around that Matilda's camp at the moment, so we'll see if it's enough to force her way into the Olympic squad. But a good first up debut, and I'm sure we'll see her back in the green and gold sooner rather than later.
Yeah, it was a cameo performance, but again, given the fact that she got the start ahead of, say, a Winnie Heatley and a few others that didn't get onto the park in San Antonio, that it's obviously she's impressed in training enough for Tony Gustafsson to have a look at her as far in a game situation. So well done to Sian. Like I said, we've had the privilege of seeing her grow up pretty much in front of our eyes in the league, from the QAS days through Moreton Bay and Brisbane City, Brisbane Roar, and now a Matilda. And that's...
And the Gap.
And them too. So,
but, look at that, a club outside of the mayor's jurisdiction. Oh, yeah, them too.
Yeah. Oh, no. I'm sorry, I forgot about time at the Gap, so... Yeah, but see a place for all those clubs, yeah, and it's great to see also be a Royal player and a Matildas player. It has been a fantastic year for Sian Fryer, no doubt about that.
Yeah, I've said it before and I'll say it again. It was a year that I think even she would have gone, I didn't see this coming, because just the way she's taken the opportunities afforded to her have been phenomenal and deserves all the credit she can get.
Absolutely. And again, as I said, there's spots available in that Olympic team potentially coming up in a couple of months' time. And wouldn't it be fantastic to see her there? We'll have to wait and see.
Just get Queensland to send a team to the Olympics.
We'd send a mean team to the Olympics as a Republic of Queensland.
We had 12 in this squad, so there's a few more to come back as well. But, so I'd be interested to see two more games for the Matildas before I go to Paris. A series against China, a game in Adelaide, and a game in Sydney at Acor Stadium, which I hear is selling very, very well. I don't know if it's going to be a sellout like to keep the streak alive, but certainly the farewell series. And let's just hope that Sian and the rest of the Queensland girls are involved in those farewell games.
Just on that, James, I mean, doesn't Queensland result in most of the medals we win at the Olympics anyway, given most of the swimmers are from up here? I think you're right. Queensland, we should just send our own national team to the Olympics. I'm sure we do. I'm sure we beat the rest of Australia, particularly in the swimming pool, we would. And then we've got a great football team as well.
Believe it or not, actually, during the Commonwealth Games, it must have been 2 years ago, wherever they were, we actually did a joke at work saying that WA was going to secede and send their own team at the Commonwealth Games. I honestly think to revive the Commonwealth Games, stop doing the, you know, cheating stuff that Great Britain do by drawing from four countries. Make the Australians separate and send their own teams.
I'll watch that. I don't watch much Commonwealth Games, but I'd watch that.
That's how you get the Commonwealth Games back on track. Make Australia break up into states, because you know what? It would be great. You know, you have the semi-finals of, say,
just picks up the 400-meter freestyle in lane one, Victoria, lane two, New South Wales, lane three, Queensland, and so on. Get the Victorians on the line. Let's get that happening. They can reorganize those Commonwealth Games. That would sell out in an instant.
And it gets even funnier when, like, the Australian states are just blocking out the four countries of Great Britain.
Exactly.
There we go. We've just solved the Commonwealth Games. That's what we do.
New Zealand will still win the rugby, though, so there is that.
Yeah, well, Australia can't beat New Zealand when they combine.
So. Well, they're like a state of Australia, so...
A town.
Careful, you pair.
Yeah, no, we like New Zealand now.
We do. We just
don't like the rest of Australia.
Yeah.
All right, yeah. Actually, I do remember in school at one point, we were doing in English, we were doing a thing on persuasive speaking, and it was, the topic was, should New Zealand become a state of Australia? I opted for the negative, believe it or not, because I argued that they should be a town. I was very lucky I had a teacher that got the joke. But yeah, anyway.
Did sheep carry passports? Pardon? I say, did sheep carry passports?
And hello to everyone not from Queensland listening to this.
Yeah. Sorry. I couldn't resist.
Assuming you didn't turn off 5 minutes ago.
We love New Zealand. You've got a beautiful country over there.
Yes, and I want to go over there again at some point this year. But
yes, why.
Yeah, Queenstown is lovely. I think I might have to go check that out again.
I can take
Tommy and hit him with a snowball. I didn't say that out loud. All right. Back to the news. Ollie Roos had their opening game of the AFC Under-23 Asian Cup against Jordan. Keegan Yelchich was on the bench. Boy, was it worth missing him on Saturday for that.
Yeah, I mean, it's not surprising he was on the bench, wasn't he? He was the last one into the squad, so he's going to be the last one on the bench. But nil all against Jordan, and they did really well in the Asian Cup. And maybe they've taken some of that confidence the senior team had in that tournament through to this tournament, because the Ollie Roos just couldn't break them down. And that's the unfortunate thing here for the under-23s, is their best team would have won that game comfortably. But because we've got half a side in, it levels the playing field significantly. And Jordan, from all reports, did quite well to hold on and get a point. So fair play to Jordan, but not the start that Tony Fidmar would have been hoping for in this Olympic qualifying campaign.
Apparently, it's very, very slow first half. I think the word that the AFC match report reported media actually used was the word tepid. In second half, Jordan actually had a goal, got the ball in the back of the net, but it was disallowed for an offside, and they actually reduced to 10 men with about 7 minutes to go. So besides all that and domination in possession and control, the Ollie Roos get a point. They take on Indonesia on Thursday. Qatar won the other match, so in the group against Indonesia. So it's going to be very, very interesting, because it's a straight top two shootout, and going and looking to play Qatar in the last round, which might be fairly difficult. Certainly, qualification for the next round, and then they need to win a quarter final to qualify for the Olympics. And warrior will qualify at a semi-final to make it through automatically through Olympics. So the path has just gotten a little bit tougher for the Ollie Roos.
Well, we'll just have to hope for the best, I suppose. All right, this weekend, penultimate round of the A-League. We've kind of talked about it already, so I'll try and keep this relatively quick. Adam, what are you looking for out of this game from the Raw?
I just want to show up. And take the opportunities. It's now down to pride and performance, and players playing for contracts for next season. And I think it's for a few players to step up. And I'm not sure if in the clip from the presser, I asked the question about whether there'd be an opportunity for younger players to get a chance in these last two games. Ruben Zakovic sort of indicated that pretty much that he'll stick to the same sort of side. So I think that this match day squad that's been pretty much consistent for the last few weeks, sans a few changes here and there, they're the ones that got to do the job last two games, and I think a few of them are on trial for a contract either at the club or elsewhere.
Yeah, it's in there, James. At James and Adam, so the people have heard that, but I think that it comes down to just play with some freedom. I mean, if we all think the finals are now out of the picture, play with freedom. Go out there and express yourself and show what you can do. And let's see if we can finally end this Amy Park record down there, because I'm sick of talking about it. I know they're better away to victory than they are to Melbourne City and Western, but can we start racking up some wins at that place, please? That would be a nice end to the season on the road. But well, just go out there and play with some freedom.
Funnily enough, remember the last round last season where they actually needed to beat the Victory to avoid the Australia Cup playoff? And they went and did just that. So, you know,
yeah, we would have swapped it for 2016 or whatever it was.
Yeah.
So I'm just looking at the ladder as well and the matchups.
Victory, you're going to have a little bit of motivation as well because
They got a lot more on this.
They will wrap up home field advantage for the elimination finals with at least a draw. Because I was going to say Sydney and MacArthur are both 3 points behind, but they play each other on Saturday. So they're basically playing for the other spot, the fourth spot, the second home game in the elimination finals. So I think Victory would like to. I think they'd at least like to wrap up and at least have a game in hand. They can't really do much else. So I wouldn't say that they'll lay down their arms for the Raw to come in and get the job done. I think they've got a bit for their own, more than just pride. So it's not going to be easy, but the Raw have done it before. So look, a 1-0 smash and grab worked to me.
I think Victory would much rather finish third, right? I mean, and play whoever limps into sixth place. You wouldn't want to play Sydney FC or MacArthur in round one of the finals, given that those two sides have been a lot more consistent this year, and it might set up a very interesting Melbourne derby on week round one of the finals, which could be quite a lot of fun. I think it'll be the second time they've played in the finals, but that would be quite a bit of fun if that were to eventuate.
I have a feeling I know what the commercial department at the APL is hoping for.
What, either a Sydney derby or a Melbourne derby? One of the two?
No tengo nos dos.
Well, it can happen because if Western Sydney beats Melbourne City and Sydney somehow get in front of Melbourne Victory, there's your Sydney derby elimination final. So, yeah, but no, so I don't know if the marketing department are hoping for a Wellington home field advantage for the whole of the final series as what at least I am hoping for.
Well, I think
a lot of people secretly hope for.
And also, we love
New Zealand, by the way.
When has the A League had that good of a luck to wind up with derbies in the first weekend of the final? When has the AFL good in the last few years? Yeah.
They need it. Put it that way.
Yeah. All right. Well, yeah, for this game, I just want to see something positive. Give us something to make that game against Adelaide meaningful for a reason.
Quinn on a cheerful note, by the way.
Yes. Mm.
Shout out Quinn McNichol for his couple of goals away with the under-17s, I think it was, last week as well. They played Switzerland, I think it was, Adam?
Switzerland under-16s played and they
scored two goals in a 2-1 win.
They play Inter Milan under-17s tonight, our time, will we? Yeah, Tuesday, yes. So, yeah, Tuesday night as we record. So, hopefully he goes on. David Belonghi, the other Queenslander as well, got on the score sheet in that win against Switzerland as well. He is part of the Gold Coast Knights Academy.
Cool. Yes, congratulations to both of those guys. And, that's going to be it for this edition of the Brisbane Football Review. Thank you, Scott.
Good to talk to you guys again. See you next week.
Thank you, Adam.
Yeah, thank you and good night.
And thank you, everyone, for listening. We'll be back to review the Victory game next weekend or next Tuesday-ish. And we'll also make sure to encourage you to tune in to NPL Sunday, which comes out Sunday night at the conclusion of every NPL round featuring Scott and Adam. And make sure you get out to the local grounds this weekend as well. Whole lot of good action on the cards, especially in the NPL women's division. There are some must-watch encounters there. And really looking forward to all of that. Thank you, everyone, for listening. We'll be back next week. Good night.